Yeah, how do I sound, Mr. Wayne? The level's correct. I'm just trying to keep it kosher. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yo, check this out. Drive around town, top down, black Benz. Of course, I'm blasting my HD radio. Monday through Friday, 8 to 11. My dial's locked on that hot talk station. Tim Conway Jr., his show's so great. OG Valley Stud reppin' 818. Been hearing forever how his dad's so good, but you won't find a dude who's less Hollywood. At 97.1, I'm his biggest fan, but he still needs a partner. Yeah, I said it, man. Hey, Jerry, cue up that big red mic. Make it hot. Let the stud start the show.
All right, welcome, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 Free FM. And we have a special treat for everybody tonight. We've got a huge, huge show for tonight, including Taryn Vu coming in at 9 o'clock. And a great topic at 10 o'clock that we'll tell you about. But first, a man that might save you from killing yourself. If you're a big fan of reading the Huffington Post, or perhaps you think that every time you turn the news on, somebody else is talking about how America sucks. And his name is Bill Whittle. I've been reading his blog for quite some time, and he's here to tell you that America is still fantastic. Is that right? Welcome, Bill.
It's good to be here.
Yeah,
it's really
fantastic. All right. Now, this guy is very inspiring because he doesn't take what he sees on the news, and that is not gospel to him. This man is probably smarter than most of you listening, including myself. And he also does tons of research. And whenever I'm feeling that America does suck because I've gotten a little too much Tim Robbins or Susan Sarandon in me, I go to his website, which is ejecteject.com. And you can see all the blogs there. Welcome. Nice to see you, man.
It's really great to be here, Tim.
So when people start with America sucks, give us like an overview on why you still think this is the greatest country in the history of mankind.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. You know how... You often hear about people say, you know, when I was a young guy, I thought my dad was just a genius, and then I turned 16 and he turned into a complete idiot, and then right. By the time I got to be 30, he was a genius again.
Right.
I think you can look at America that way, you know. I mean, a lot of kids, certainly my age, my dad was a Vietnam vet. He was a World War II vet, and I just grew up loving this country. It just raised that way, as in my mother's milk kind of thing.
Right.
Who's British, by the way,
right.
But loves this country very much. And then you get to the point where you start hearing about the kind of things that, you know, Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn talk about, and you figure about, well, you know, we really did give the Indians a raw deal, and that slavery thing wasn't very pretty either. And you suddenly get this idea that, man, I've broken through the veil. I see that this is really an evil, horrible capitalist place. And you get the sense of, my God, I've really evolved. But if you start to read history, and if you start to really look into the history of human civilization and culture and stuff, you begin to realize that with these flaws taken, and they certainly are flaws, they're certainly not a perfect country, but when you look at those flaws in the context of other cultures and other civilizations, what you find is you're left with a country that is so exceptional and so wonderful on so many levels that it really is kind of putting your head through the veil a second time and going, holy cow, you know what? My dad was right. There's a lot of really deep and broad historical and factual reasons to believe that this country is really the most remarkable place in the history of the world and a place to be very, very, very proud of. And I've always felt that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of – and I'm not talking about just Republicans, but Republicans and Democrats, they're all very giving when it comes to charity. Anytime there's a disaster in the world, the United States is there first and we're there last. When the tsunami hit – Back in 2006, I believe?
I think so.
Yeah, Christmas. 2006. The first packages I saw of, you know, grain and wheat and supplies being taken off a boat said USA on them.
Yeah, there were guys who were on the ground, within hours off
right.
of U.S. carriers. And people look at a carrier and they see force projection, and it's kind of a handy thing to have. But an aircraft carrier is also a floating city. It's a floating hospital. It's a floating kitchen. It's got 5,000 highly trained individuals. These things are little emergency crisis cities that we can put down anywhere we want to.
Right.
And while the rest of the world was talking about how America ought to send more money, our guys were on the ground taking care of the people when they needed the help. Most of the money those other countries pledged to tsunami relief, that money never showed up.
Is that right?
Yeah, never showed up.
Well, you know, I was talking to Bill off the air before the show, and the perception of a lot of people around the world is the United States goes around the world and rapes countries and takes their natural resources and it does nothing but take, take, take. And it's actually the exact opposite. Is that right?
Well, this is one of those things that we were talking about a minute ago, and that is the sense that, you know, you can kind of feel half smart if you have half the picture, but if you look at the whole picture historically, you kind of come back to that great country thing again. A great example, you hear people all the time talk about American imperialism. You know, we're an evil imperialist country and our corporations go out and rape the world and that's, you know, that's what we do. But if you open up a dictionary and you look up the definition of empire, the definition of empire is it's a country that rules other countries. It doesn't influence them. It's not – it doesn't have sway. It's not – it rules them. And if you're going to claim that America is an empire, the first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to show me what other countries, what other sovereign countries are ruled by the United States of America, where the United States of America can go in and say to another country, that parliamentary decision you just came to, no, voided by the imperial power.
And the number is zero.
Zero. We have territories, but those territories are voluntary territories. Guam and, you know, a few places in the Pacific choose to be with America. The rest of it's states, and we have bases overseas. And like the case in the Philippines, if they don't want us anymore, we say, okay, we'll come home.
Right.
That's unheard of. It's unheard of in an empire. Another thing that you see from empires, the whole point, Tim, really, the whole point of an empire, you know, it's not much point in having one if you're not going to go out there and suck resources away from the colonies. And in traditional empires like the British Empire, which was the last real empire, you had something like the East India Company, which basically sat in India for four centuries and took the wealth of that country and just took it. And there were British governors in India who ruled India. We don't have any governors. What governors do we have in these countries that we are supposedly imperializing? We don't have any governors. We don't take money out of those countries. We actually put money into those countries. The U.S. has military bases all around the world, but those bases are there on a voluntary basis. And the amount of money that the United States pumps into those countries is enormous.
Right.
That's why they keep us there.
And what if the United States did, you know, go out there and send the Marines into these small countries and, you know, and you grab their resources, their natural resources and such? Does that make financial sense to this country?
Well, this is one of those arguments that if you learn how to think critically, just in general, you can solve a lot of very simple things. Get very easy for you. I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's just take an example. One of the things I see online sometimes, especially from people in Europe, I'm sad to say, is that, you know, you Americans, you are only able to be as rich and successful as you are because you and your evil corporations go out into the world and you rape these third world countries and you steal all of their authentic third world wealth
right.
and you bring it back home and you're the reason those people are poor. Well, anybody can do this. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You just have to have a $4 calculator from a drugstore.
Right.
But if you get a calculator out and you go to the World Bank online and Google the GDP, the gross domestic product of various countries.
How much money? How much money
the country – how many goods and services the country produces in a year.
Right.
Okay. Sometimes called GNP, gross national product. But if you look at that, those numbers are available and you look at the U.S. and I think the U.S.'s GDP is $12 trillion or something like that. So take a small country, not the smallest country because I don't want to cheat, but a small, decent-sized country. And I looked at a country called Djibouti, which is in Africa. It's a very poor country. Its GDP is a couple billion. And I took the GDP of Djibouti and divided it into the GDP of the United States. It turns out the U.S. GDP is something like 7,600 times what Djibouti is. If you take that same ratio and apply it to the days of a year – what you find out is if the U.S. Marines went into Djibouti and took everything, every basket, every pot, everything that Djibouti makes in a year, took their entire GDP, it would run the U.S. GDP for about an hour and a half. And you could take the combined GDP of the 30 poorest countries in the world, and it would probably run the U.S. economy for 3 or 4 or 5 days.
So at that point, it wouldn't make financial sense even to send the Marines in. It would be too cost-effective.
The gas to get them there would be worth more probably than what you pull out. And again, the point I'm trying to make is this is not like cleverness on my part. I'm not just spinning a clever argument. Anybody can take a calculator, can go to the World Bank statistics, find out what the GDP of the U.S. is versus these poor countries, and do the same calculation I did. And what really happens is the U.S. through its government charities to foreign countries. But, you know, people always say, well, gee, you know, the U.S. doesn't really for its size of its economy. You guys really are kind of stingy because your government doesn't give that much money, relatively speaking, to Sweden, let's say. Yeah, but that doesn't count what the private citizens give through things like Red Cross and through all these independent
right.
private things.
It's huge.
It's enormous. So how can we be an empire? What's the point of being an empire, if the point of an empire is to pull in all this stuff and steal it, any rational person can take a look at these numbers and realize we don't steal resources from the world. We pump resources into the world. Our military bases are a source of big income for those countries. And I just want to say one last thing real quick, because this is an argument that's always bugged me quite a bit. You know, you hear a lot of these people talking about Walmart and how evil Walmart is because, you know, Adidas or something goes into some country and they pay people $1.80 a day to work on shoes or whatever. And they're saying it's an outrage, you know. It shouldn't be this cheap. You know, it's taking advantage of these poor people.
Yeah, you hear that all the time, that Walmart is the big evil, you know, the big devil in the United States.
Yeah, because they have these sweatshops overseas and stuff. Look, I'm not saying sweatshops are a swell thing. But what I am saying is that people who are in the countries where these factories are set up are lining up around the block to get those jobs, because if it's $1.80 a day, that's $1.80 more than the rest of the people are making. But here's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not defending those practices exactly, but what I am saying is this. If you're one of those people who likes to complain about how cheap the prices are at Walmart, and you still buy your shoes there because they do, and you know they do.
Right.
So if it really offends you that you get a pair of really good shoes for $12 at Walmart, when if they made them here in the United States, they would cost $80, why don't you take that $68 balance and put it into one of these charity programs and feed kids for years? You know, it's $1 a day per person. You could feed 60 kids for a year on the amount of money you save by going to Walmart. But see, some people don't want to think that way. They don't mind having their money taken from them.
Right.
But if it comes a question of, hey, you know, I have to give my money, they're a little
danger. Over. All right, Bill Whittle is with us, and he has written Silent America. He also has a website, ejecteject.com. And he's a very optimistic guy when it comes to the United States of America. And you know, when you watch the news, when you especially these network news shows, you constantly hear that the United States sucks. The oil prices, the oil companies, Iraq, the economy, the people that got screwed in home loans over the last couple of years, that the United States is a terrible place to live and a terrible influence on the rest of the world. And he's here to make the other side of the argument that it is not. So if you have a question, or perhaps you still think America sucks and you want to challenge Bill Whittle, here are the phone numbers, 520-9710. And perhaps America has been terrible to you, and you can call us up here and blast away and challenge Bill on his theories here. 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Now, when you see a lot of these television sets and a lot of the computers, a lot of the VCRs, the DVD players, all kinds of, you know, the MP3 players, everything is coming from China or Japan. Mm-hmm. The great cars that everybody drives around the United States now are from Japan or Germany. But is the United States losing its edge when it comes to like patents or creative ideas?
As you say, I take great pride in being an optimist about this country. I think that's something genuinely to be a little worried about. Certainly, most of our manufacturing base seems to be going overseas. It's been a pleasure to get to know John Ratzenberger, who is Cliff on Cheers, and he has a series called Made in America, where he goes around and talks about people who work with their hands and the amount of disrespect that those people get in the media. You know, every time you see a sitcom, the plumber's always just some nasty,
some schmuck,
fat guy with a butt crack, and they're always just played to be just jerks. But really, these are the people that make everything work for
us. Absolutely.
And John says that, you know, if the cables on the Golden Gate Bridge were to snap tomorrow, we have nobody in this country who knows how to repair them, and nobody has that skill set anymore.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's what he says, and I believe him.
Right.
There's certainly something to be worried about in that regard. My overview of this thing would be to say that, you know, there have been three mega trends in human history. There's the agricultural wave, which lasted for thousands of years, and the Industrial Revolution, which lasted for hundreds of years, and manufacturing cars is an industrial era skill, and those jobs are going overseas. And the third wave is the information wave. Now, certainly, if that's the case, we rule the information wave. If you look at I'm pretty sure about this. I saw this not too long ago, but I think I saw something amazing. Like, of the top 25 countries in France, not one of them post-dates World War II. I mean, just think about that. If it's not exactly true, it's probably pretty close to that.
Wait a minute. The top 25 countries?
In France, I believe I saw this. It's a tough thing about reading on the web. You know,
right.
It's just gone.
Right.
But I think it said that none of them post-date World War II. I guess Airbus is a consortium with other countries. But the point they were trying to make is most of those were very old kind of economy companies. And you look at the United States, you know, Google, Microsoft, Apple, all of these, Amazon, all these companies, Yahoo.
But how are we doing compared to the rest of the world when it comes to innovation?
One thing I read that scared me really badly was, you know, with China's population, they could have, you know, they could have 100,000 of their worst engineers every year while we're producing 25,000 of our best. That's something to be concerned about. But I do think still that there is something exceptional about our culture. And what I mean by that is in this culture, rebellion is praised. And I think rightfully so, you know, within limits. You don't want to be constantly attacking everything. But the rebel and the underdog are heroes in this society. In Chinese society, Japanese society, they have an expression, you know, the nail that stands above the others is the one that gets hammered down. That kind of a mindset, that kind of social mindset does not lend itself to tremendously out-of-the-box thinking. And as technology accelerates and the software especially accelerates, it's that kind of free-thinking, out-of-the-box thinking that is paying the big dividends, and I think we own that curve.
And we're still on top when it comes to, is it patents or innovation? Or
one of the things that, you know, it never fails to amaze me to go into some of these chat rooms online and listen to Europeans talking about how stupid and fat Americans are and how dumb we are. I was up at the Mojave Airport several years ago when I watched a guy on his own dime fly into space. You know, he just got in an airplane and flew into space. His name was Mike Melville with Burt Rutan. And I got
And those Europeans haven't been to the moon yet.
They haven't been to the moon.
F them.
No! And I will say this. Excuse me for this slight diversion, but this just really moved me to tears. It was a people's space program, that Spaceship One thing. And by that, I mean I was a guest of some friends I have up there at X-Corps. And I was on the tarmac when that plane taxied by. And the guy who was going up, a guy named Mike Melville, first private citizen space, by the way, was an African-American. He's from South Africa. But Mike Melville had his little window out of that airplane, and he was waving a little American flag as he went down the line. And all of us were able to run up to him and touch him on the hand before he went. And go get him, Mike.
That's great.
And by God, he did. Well, so that's hard to justify as a stupid country. And just to say, if you want some quantification about this, if you look at the number of scientific citations in research papers in any given year.
And what is that? What is a scientific citation?
Scientific citation would be where in a research, certain kind of research where somebody is making some kind of a breakthrough or some kind of scientific research, and then it's accredited to a university to a specific scientist. That's
right.
Called a scientific citation. And I think the number two country in the, this is out of memory, in the world is Great Britain, I think with 8,300. And the United States in any given year has 37,400.
Is that right? So we're still kicking ass.
Yeah, in a big way.
All right. Bill Whittle is with us. Silent America is the book that he's written. And we are kicking ass, ladies and gentlemen, as a country. So don't listen to these people who come on and tell you how crappy this country is, because it will wear you down. It'll kill your immune system. It will turn your health into a complete disaster.
And it's self-fulfilling.
Yes.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Enough with it.
Yeah, but take Harrison Ford's advice. You know, don't get cocky, kid.
Yes, okay. Let's talk to Tim here on the 5 Freeway. You're on 97.1 Free FM. Bill Whittle is with us. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Timmy. Hey,
hey.
Bill. Pleasure. I was wondering why you thought that the media is trying to portray a negative outlook of the United States when it's so obvious that we're not. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, the question is, why would the media paint this picture as a crap hole when we all know it's not?
That is going to – I have a good answer for that, but it's going to take 3-4 minutes.
Oh, is that right? All right. Can you do it in 1 minute?
No.
Okay.
I can come back to it after a
break.
All
right. Let's take a break and come back to it then. I like how honest you are. It's like, no. You're not going to get the minute version
there
of it.
There is no minute version.
I know you like things condensed. It's not going to happen here. All right. When we come back, Bill Whittle is with us, Silent America, and he will tell you exactly why the media portrays this country, the United States of America, as an asshole. 520-9710, 888-520-9710. Bill Whittle is with us. EjectEjectEject.com is his website. And it's the Tim Conway Jr. Show, live on 97.1 Free FM. Ow! All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Tim Conway Jr. Show, live on 97.1 Free FM. Bill Whittle is with us, and he doesn't think America sucks. As a matter of fact, he thinks it's the best country on the planet. And worth talking about. And you have a, by the way, welcome back. Nice to see you, buddy.
It's good to be back.
Silent America is the book he's written, and EjectEjectEject.com is his website. And right before we went to break, somebody had asked why you think the media, or do you think the media in the United States intentionally sabotages this country? And you said this is going to take 3 or 4 minutes. I said, can you give him 1 minute version? You said, no. So here's your 3 or 4 minutes. Do you think they're doing it on purpose?
I don't think they're doing it on purpose. Certainly don't think they're doing it on purpose. You know, one thing you have to be very careful of, and one thing I see happening that does worry me about America quite a lot is this just this super rise in paranoid thinking. And that's a real concern of mine. So I try very hard not to get paranoid. I certainly do not think that leftists or you know, liberals, I don't think they realize the kind of inflection that they have, and I certainly don't think they're organized to hate America. But here's what I do think happens. If you look at human history, and I'm not talking about American history now or even Western history, I'm talking about the history of humanity going back to when people were pushing sticks into clay tablets 7,000 years ago.
Right.
If you look at human history, the pattern is pretty much always the same. You see a civilization start to get together, starts to rise. People are very patriotic. People are working together. People have great pride in their culture because they're hacking it out of the wilderness, basically. And everything is new and everything is progressing and everything's getting better on a daily basis. And people are very proud of that culture. And you see the civilization start to rise and start to peak. And then this civilization produces all the things that we all like. Music and literature and science and medicine, poetry, art, all of these things, product of civilization, people working together. But if you look at history, you see time and time and time again, once it gets to that plateau after a generation or two, it starts to decay and then it collapses. And it always collapses the same way. The Russians have an expression. They say a fish rots from the head down. And what that means is that every civilization that's ever fallen has fallen because the elites, the ruling elites, are the ones that go first. When the common people of that city are still on the wall, ready to give their lives to defend that city, it's some son of a gun in a silk robe goes out at midnight and opens the door and lets those barbarians in. It's always the same, Tim. Always the
right.
same.
And who are those people nowadays?
Well, they've always been the same crowd. And I'm not saying these people sit in basements and plan this to happen. I don't think that at all. But what does seem to happen is that the intellectuals, usually the philosophers, go first, you know. Everything is completely, there's so much prosperity, there's so much security. Their lives start out at such a high level. There's really nowhere to go with that. They look at people like car salesmen or camel salesmen. They're making all this money, and these massive geniuses aren't, you know, and there's got to be something wrong with that situation.
Right.
So they start looking at the flaws in their society, and it makes them feel a little hip and different because everybody's talking about how great it is. Yeah, well, this is bad, and this is bad, and this is bad. So the philosophers go first, and we see that today in academics. You know, the only real communists and Maoists and Marxists left in the world are teaching at American universities because that's the only place with that much prosperity to allow that kind of stupidity to go.
Yeah, but I also think that America has had an ass full of that because you see it in the decline of circulation in most of the newspapers.
You betcha.
You also see it in the movies that Hollywood produces that nobody goes to see. The anti-American, you know, films that are out there. The latest one was Lions for Lambs, and you know, you got three big stars in it. You know, $40 or $50 million budget, and it makes $13 million.
Yeah, thanks. And Redacted with you know, Brian De Palma made $35,000. My little book on my website outsold Redacted. But let me just finish this because it's an interesting. I think it's a real pattern. I see it every time I look at history. The intellectuals go first, right? The philosophers go first. This is not worth defending. This is actually fundamentally corrupt, and blah 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 blah. And then the artists follow them. You know, a couple artists are reading these books, and they think, hey, well, you know, maybe there's something to this. And the artists follow, and then the politicians want to be with the cool kids, and there they go.
And where are we now?
But the common, I think we're at that point, frankly.
Where the politicians are going with the artists and the
certainly you look at academics for the last 40 years, the first thing they did when the leftists, the radical leftists took over Yale in the 60s, the first thing they did was burn the law library. Now, that's not an accident,
right.
You know. That's not an accident. But first the academics, then the artists, and then the politicians follow. And we see those signs today. And that would be enough to scare the crap out of you. Except that there is one thing happening in this society, in this civilization, that's never happened before, ever, ever in history. And that is this. For the first time in human history, common people are able to communicate with each other directly through the internet or through talk radio. Common people. The people who are still ready to defend that city are able to talk to each other directly and encourage each other and give each other hope. And that, to me, is a profound, profound change. And I think it's our chance to break this cycle.
Excellent. All right. Bill Whittle is with us. He's written A Silent America. And he is not one of these guys in the media who thinks America sucks. He actually thinks it's the greatest country in the greatest time in the history of the planet. And if you'd like to challenge that, 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. David in Long Beach, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Hey, pretty good. You asked a comment about the medical system in America compared to other countries that are supposed to be so much better.
All right. Well, let's ask Bill. What do you think? Where is the better medical system?
Other than the United States,
yeah.
I can't really say much about that. I know this is a sore spot for a lot of people. I've had a problem getting insurance myself, frankly. I have a precondition that makes it tough for me to get insurance. Certainly, American health care, if you are insured, is the best in the world. There's no question about that. That's why people come here. I mean, you know, Madonna has a baby or tells Gwyneth Paltrow, who lives in England, she's very British now.
Right.
And Madonna on the QT says, oh, and by the way, don't have that kid in a national health care hospital. Go back to Beverly Hills, have your baby there, and come back here and then tell everybody how rotten America is.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And rightfully so. You know, there's that old joke that, you know, in the national health care system, pregnant women are on a 10-month waiting list for maternity care. But I don't mean to sound like I'm glib and everything's just totally cool and everything's perfect, because it's certainly not the case. There are
right.
certainly some problems. But I think you can say that there's something like 15 million uninsured Americans in this country, which is probably what? That's a few percent, or 10%, maybe 5% of the population. So to say that say that the whole thing is just junk out of the gate, that's just plain not true. One thing I think that keeps me so optimistic is I try to maintain an attitude of gratitude as much as I can. And to give it some historical basis, let me just say this. The poorest person in America today, if they're hit by a car or if they're suffering from some serious disease, are going to be uninsured. I understand that. They're going to go to a hospital, and they are going to receive the quality of medical care that the richest and most powerful person in the world could not have dreamed of 50 years ago. Every single person's going to get that. I'm not saying that's optimal, and I'm not saying that's a good thing, and I'm certainly not saying that can't be improved.
Right.
But nevertheless, if you are suffering from pneumonia or you're suffering from a broken leg, you're going to be put in a medical vehicle and taken to the best medical care on the planet, and you're going to get that care.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, 50 years ago, nobody could have ever imagined the medical care we have nowadays.
No.
All right, let's talk about what about the people who say, and you see a bumper stickers that say this too, that war for oil, that we went into Iraq for the oil.
Well,
is that true?
I don't think it's true. And you know, look, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy with opinion. But I think you can certainly, you know, one of the things, Tim, that really helps me quite a lot in any of these things, especially like the 9/11 conspiracies or whatever, is
right.
when I run into that kind of thing, the first thing I do is I just say, well, let's grant the premise. Let's just say that what this person is saying is true. If what they're saying is true, what would it look like? And a little example I like to use is a lot of people believe that the Loch Ness Monster, right, is a plesiosaur. It's a dinosaur from 200 million years ago, right?
Right.
And that we just catch glimpses of it, and every now and then there's a wake or a ripple or a picture of a fin or something. And I say, okay, you're telling me there's a plesiosaur in Loch Ness, and my response to you would be a plesiosaur is an air-breathing animal. It breathes air. If this thing breathes air, it's got to come up for air 50, 60 times an hour.
Right.
We should have HD close-ups of this thing 60 times an hour.
Right.
If I grant your premise, that's the conclusion. And plus, there's no fish in Loch Ness. Does it order for pizza? I mean, when you grant the premise, you're led certain ways. So if you talk about a war for oil, I think the intelligent question to say to yourself is, what would a war for oil look like? If it really was a war for oil and that's all, what would that look like? Seems pretty clear to me that if it's a war for oil, you use the Air Force to gain control over the skies of Iraq. You put the military around those oil fields. You cordon them off. You set up military convoys from the oil fields to the hub at Basra. You load that oil onto U.S. tankers and you ship it back home. It's a very easy thing to defend. We'd probably take two casualties defending an oil field, putting a cordon, an armored cordon around an oil field. That's easy. Our casualties come from guys patrolling Baghdad and Basra and Fallujah. These guys are not just soldiers. They're traffic cops. They're marriage counselors. They're business advisors.
Right.
If it were a war for oil, we'd be out in the oil fields with our army. We'd put the oil on a convoy. We'd get it out of there. We'd lose five guys in 5 years to traffic accidents, and that'd be the end of it. And furthermore, let me just add one last thing. They were saying a war for oil back in 1991 during the first Gulf War, right? It's a war for oil. Okay, Saddam blows the oil fields in 1991. He retreats out of Kuwait, and the United States Army sits on those oil fields. They're ours. We own them. There's no one else. Those guys are 400 miles away and running.
Right.
What do? We spend our money and our effort to put those oil fields out, those fires out, and we go home.
Right.
We go home. Now, that's not my opinion. I didn't invent that. That's just historical fact.
All right, Bill Whittle is with us again. Silent America, and we have a minute before I take a break here. What's happening real quickly in Iraq, Baghdad, Basra? What's going on over there?
I'm certainly not an expert on what's going on over there, but one of the things I mentioned earlier was that the reason I think we have hope for our society, the cycle of society, cycle of civilization, is because common people can talk to one another. And two of the common people that I listen to are guys named Michael Toten and Michael Yon. And you should Google both of these guys, because both of these guys are journalists, and they have lived in Iraq for 4 or 5 years. These are not green zone guys that go over with, you know, MSNBC, and they do a week, and then they take one patrol, and they, you know, talk about a horrible
right.
Disease. These guys live there. These guys were the guys who were reporting in 2006, look, we're in real trouble here. There's a civil war going on. We better do something. And now these guys who have lived in Fallujah and been 3, 4, 5 years in Fallujah and in the rest of Iraq, Michael Yon and Michael Toten, Google those guys. Now what they're saying is, we had 6,000 Marines in Fallujah in 2005, 2006. Now we have 250. There hasn't been an attack on U.S. forces in Fallujah. This is you know, Fallujah. This is the center of the resistance in right. 6 months. They haven't had. That is telling me something. And that's not a story I'm getting from the mainstream media. Now, I'm ready to balance that against other stories. I'm not a Pollyanna about this, you know, but that's a voice that not many people hear.
Right. And also what I don't think a lot of people do understand real quickly is the United States is building the biggest embassy, the biggest foreign embassy on the planet in Iraq right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be there for a long time.
Yeah. You know, I have a very quick argument, and I call it my RAFs argument, and here's how it goes. You may say to me that Cuba is a beacon of universal health care and universal literacy. It's an egalitarian paradise, and everybody's equal. It's a wonderful place to be. And my map may say, no, Cuba's a horrible communist dictatorship where rights are trampled on and so on. And we can discuss our maps in the chart room all we want to and argue till we're blue in the face. But comes a point when we have to go upstairs onto the deck of the ship, and then we can compare our maps to the coastline. Okay, and there are some people out there who will see their map doesn't match the coastline, and they'll say the coastline is wrong.
Right.
The question you have to ask yourself is it a paradise or is it a hellhole? Which way are the rafts going? Are people in Fort Lauderdale, are dentists in Fort Lauderdale loading their grandmothers and their children onto inner tubes to float 90 miles south to get to the workers' paradise and the universal health care and the universal literacy? Are the rafts going the other way? That is an unbeatable argument. And if Iraq really is this horrible hellhole run by Halliburton and Bush Hitler, why are guys reenlisting 4 times, 5 times, 6 times? I know guys who've gone back 7 times.
Wow.
Why would you do that?
Unreal.
Well, 7 times between two brothers anyway.
Right. All right, folks. It's Bill Whittle is with us. He wrote Silent America. Buy the book at Amazon.com or go to his website, ejecteject.com. And he thinks America's great. Thought that everyone could use a little dose of that. Since everywhere else you turn, America sucks. Might as well put the other view on once in a while here. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM.
Well, we couldn't get anyone else to show up regularly except him.
That's a great deal.
The Tim Conway Jr. Show on 97.1 SoCal's FM Talk Station.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 Free FM. Bill Whittle is with us. He's written Silent America, and you can also go to his website, ejecteject.com, and then you produce a Sunday show. Is that right?
Yeah, I am actually. My day job is I'm the editor for Sunday Morning Shootout on, that's called Shootout now, with Peter Barton and Peter Gooper. It's a movie talk show on AMC, and they take a look at the entire spectrum of Hollywood political thought from far left on one hand all the way over to extreme left on the other.
Okay. All right, let's talk to Mike in Sherman Oaks. Mike, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Hey. Sam. I love the show.
Thank you, sir.
I got to disagree with, you know, the left is spreading the fear and hates America. Don't you think to love America would be to protect the Constitution?
I certainly do. I don't remember saying that the left hates America or is spreading the fear. I do think that that one thing I notice about the left, and this is my perspective, and frankly, I'm looking forward to your perspective on it. But my perspective is that when the left talks about America, they say this would be a great country if, or it would have been a great country when, or if we do this, this is going to be a great country. But if so much of what I hear from the left is just, you know, my wife is a whore, and she was a tramp when I knew her, and blah blah blah. But don't you dare question the love of my wife, you know?
Right.
I understand that. I mean, I'm pretty much an ex-Republican. The reason I am is because I think the Republicans have not represented the Constitution. I think the Constitution is a terrific document. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that our way out of this problem that you say we have is could potentially be the Internet.
Uh-huh.
My problem with that is, I mean, that's great. I think that's
Hey, Mike, what constitutional rights have you had taken away from you recently?
Well, have you read the Patriot Act or the Military
I'm asking you the question. What constitutional rights have you had taken from you?
Well, if I am in a situation where I have to defend myself, I may not be, you know, depending on the situation, or if I'm accused of something, I may not have the right to...
But I'm asking you, what constitutional rights have you personally had taken from you?
I don't really know. I can't answer that right now. But
all right, well, call us back when you can answer it.
Let me ask you this. Let me make one point.
Wait, no, you said that the Republicans had taken away your constitutional rights, and then when we asked you which ones, you don't have any.
Well, I said the Military Commissions Act of 2006 and the Patriot Act dismisses a lot. Now, let me make a point. You can ask someone in any dictatorship in China if their rights have been affected, and I can guarantee you won't find, not every single person will say that their rights have been affected.
Can I answer that?
You can go to Afghanistan and find people that haven't been affected.
Mike, can I address that? Can I address that for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. First of all, I completely respect where you're coming from with this, because you should be worried about a dictatorship. Every American should be worried about that. But let me just ask you one thing. You're now on national radio. You're on talk radio, and theoretically your voice is being heard all across the country.
Thank you.
If you are able to voice a concern about a dictatorship on national radio and have your voice broadcast across the entire country without any fear of somebody coming to your door, that tells me we're a pretty long way away from the kind of things you're worried about. Because if you remember all those pictures of people protesting Hitler in the streets, well, you don't remember those pictures because those pictures were not taken because the protesters were just taken out and shot. Nothing amuses me more than hearing celebrities get on national television like Larry King and say their rights to free speech are being impinged by this horrible Bush Hitler Nazi
Fleischer, war. Ari Fleischer said Americans better watch what they say and watch what they do. And you can quote that.
I'll quote him right now. Ari Fleischer said that Americans better watch what they say and watch what they do. Ari Fleischer is an individual who made a statement, and you are speaking up and calling it an absurd statement. I kind of think it's an absurd statement, too.
Newt Gingrich also said that we should look into limiting the freedom of speech during times of war.
Newt Gingrich is an American who's entitled to his opinion just as you are. And the fact
that he's a politician that is in charge of making laws.
No, Mike, hold on. Here's where it gets to be very interesting, because this is the crux of the issue, okay? Newt Gingrich had made a statement. That's his opinion. You have an opinion, too. Newt Gingrich is not dictator. Newt Gingrich, and George Bush, I might add, does not have the power to do that, and you know he doesn't have the power to do
that. Hitler was democratically elected, too, just the same. I mean, if you want to draw these big comparisons.
Well, how close to you, Mike? Seriously, how close do you think this country is to a dictatorship?
I think we're pretty far off from that.
When we get closer. And I'm tired of these guys who call up and say, you know, my constitutional rights were taken from me. And then you ask them which one, and they have no idea.
And by the way, I should add this. You know, one of the great fallacies of critical thinking is you record the hits and you don't record the misses. You can make any statement, any case you want to that way. I know we got to get going. But if you look at a beach, right, and you stand on the shores of Malibu and you look down, you say, what color is the beach? And you say, well, the beach is white. But if you went down to the beach with a pair of tweezers, you know, if you've held sand in your hands, right, that every 100,000th grain is a black grain. And if you pluck that black grain out with a pair of tweezers and put it in a bucket and you spend enough time doing that, pretty soon you'll be able to say to somebody, behold the black sand of Malibu, and you won't be lying.
Right.
Right. So, you know, this kind of picking the hits and not the misses is a real problem. And just to say this, I talked to somebody earlier today who works in the FBI and has intimate knowledge of what goes on. And this person says that if it were not for the Patriot Act, you have no idea. You have no idea the number of attacks that come into this country pretty much on a daily basis.
We're going to have to get back and talk about the CIA and FBI as well, because every time you see the FBI or CIA or LAPD portrayed in a movie, there are a bunch of a-holes. And it really is disgusting. All right, Bill, thanks for coming in. You're a major stud. Silent America is the book. The website is ejecteject.com. Check it out. We'd love to have you back sometime.
I'll be here tomorrow. I'll be out in the parking lot waiting for you guys
wearing
to come down and find me.
Red, white, and blue top hat. It's an extra nice little touch there. All right, 9 o'clock. It's the news with Gina. Let's check in and see what's happening in the news. Gina Grad.
Well, the Pope ends his tour with a controversial apology, and the presidential candidates are going to debate SmackDown style tonight. This and more after the break.
Fantastic. And also, David Letterman's top 10 list is coming up. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll be on with the news right after 9 o'clock with Gina Grad. Taryn Vu is coming in, one of the hottest models on the planet. And then at 10 o'clock, we have something special for you, and Gina Grad will be joining us. It's a great night. We're on until 11 o'clock. Hope you can enjoy it or join us. And Bill, thanks for coming by.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks, buddy.
All right, it's Tim Conway, Jr. Show, live on 97.1 Free FM.